affects the church. Well, if it is, then heaven's even much better than that. I'm not going to argue with you. The church is a microcosm of heaven. It is a little small-scale representation of what immortal glory will be. And if Revelation 21 is talking about the church, then heaven is going to be 100 times better than that. To know that there's no more death, neither sorrow nor crying. My friends, that's reason to rejoice tonight. How many on this passage in Luke chapter 7, the late commentator J.C. Ryle wrote, "All funerals are mournful occasions, but it is difficult to imagine one more mournful than the one described here in Luke chapter 7. It was the funeral of a young man," he says, "and that young man, his mother's only son, and that mother a widow. There is nothing in this story that is not full of misery. And all of this misery, it must be remembered, was brought to the world through sin." I want you to notice, secondly, this morning, the mother's extremity, the mother's pain. See, this mother had lost her only son, was a widow. You say, well, she could have drawn Social Security. Remember, they didn't have government programs back then to take care of women. This was a patriarchal culture. That is, the Jewish society was a male-dominated society. Women had no status, no social status, so far as working in public. She didn't have a means of support without a male figure in her house, without a husband. This woman faced starvation because she couldn't get a job. She couldn't fend for herself, and furthermore, she faced potential danger. The Bible has much to say about the vulnerability of the widow. God is a judge of the widow in his holy covenant, but that is, he will come in justice for the widow. You remember the story of the widow before the unjust judge? And what was she complaining about? An adversary. Avenge me of my enemy, my adversary. Somebody was taking advantage of her. Widows were easy targets for thieves and robbers and rapists. People who would seek to exploit them for their own benefit. This woman, dear friends, is in a very extreme condition. She's a widow, and furthermore, now she's lost her only son. I dare say, beyond the potential of starving to death or being attacked and assaulted and taken advantage of, the grief in her soul must have been tremendous. Can you imagine the grief in this woman's soul? You know, grief is one of the most powerful emotions in life. I didn't realize until this summer in which this year in which I saw my daughter say, "Daddy," she said, "I can't bear the thought." And she just cried and grabbed her chest and said, "Oh, my heart. Oh, my heart." I didn't realize, dear friends, how much love causes us to grieve when we lose what we've loved. Isn't that right? Now, you say, well, then it would be better not to love. Because it wouldn't hurt so bad to lose what you've loved. Isn't it true, as the old poet said, that it's better to have loved than lost than never to have loved at all? I mean, look, you could have missed the pain, as that great theologian Garth Brooks said, but you would have missed the dance, right? Isn't that right? Aren't you glad for the memories? Aren't you glad for the moment? Aren't you glad, dear friends, for the time you had with this person that's now gone? Aren't you glad that you did love? I told Bethany, I said, "Honey, let this be a lesson to you, to always tell the people that you love, I love you, before you say goodbye, because you never know. You never know when it's going to be the last time that you will see somebody." Notice this mother's grief. a situation that appears to be hopeless. It isn't that exactly what is meant for you and me. In salvation, we didn't invite him, we didn't expect him, we didn't ask him to come to us as if you asked Jesus. He'll come and change your life. I'm telling you about it. Jesus, dear friends, it shows up on the scene, unexpected, uninvited, unsolicited, and yet he brings blessing to a situation that appears to be very hopeless. That's what grace is all about. I know no more beautiful, vivid picture of sovereign mercy and free grace. And this one here in Luke chapter 7. Grace is God taking the initiative. You want a good definition? That's a good one. Grace is God taking the initiative. That is, he doesn't wait on you to say, Lord, I need you. But the Lord takes the first step, the second step, and every other step to meet us at the point of our need. As in this situation, he bestows blessing. Was there anything that man could have done to solve this problem? Absolutely not. There was no potential for help. Jesus, dear friends, shows up. He said, well, what right does he have to intervene? He shouldn't even ask permission. I'm telling you, the Lord works by his grace. He doesn't ask considered permission. He doesn't say, well, is it okay if I say something? Can I say a few words? Jesus just takes over. He just takes over like he did in Luke 24 at the house of those two on the road to Emmaus when he got to their house. Notice he becomes the host. You ever notice that? He's not the host. He's a guest there, but yet he assumes the leadership. He's in charge. I'm so glad he is in charge, aren't you, dear friends? I'm so glad the Lord's in charge. I'm so glad he takes over our salvation. I'm so glad because we're in a helpless condition like this boy. We're in a bereft condition like this mother, and if it weren't for the love and compassion and grace that the Lord Jesus Christ had been upon for any of us. I want you to notice finally tonight, dear friends, the power of Christ's resurrection. When he touched the bier, he said, Young man, I say unto thee, arise. Watch this. And the young man, about 30 minutes later, blinked a couple of times and yawned and was woozy. And after a few hours, he was able to get his wits about him. Is that what it says? Jesus said, arise.